to the Early Room Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Texas, that same number. You know, my guest is Claiborne Benson, curator of Wisconsin's Black Historical Society. And we're here, you know, it's Black History Month. And so, you know, I asked Claiborne to come in and talk about, you know, history from a different perspective than you're going to hear anywhere else, because he can certainly tell you about Wisconsin and its place in during slavery and others. Let me go to Tom from L.A. Tom, thank you very much for waiting as long as you have. You say what?
Well, Claiborne, thank you so much again for the history. It's so important, so important. My question to you is this. It sounds to me like there were a lot of Black people that were actually up in the western part of Wisconsin. I'm from the northwestern part of Wisconsin originally, up in the Durand, Eau Claire area. And I'm just wondering, how did the people from the northwest and the western parts of Wisconsin start somehow putting people back into the Milwaukee area, you know, Black people? Or what happened? Because it sounds to me like there was actually a little less segregation going on early on than what became of it.
Well, I think people recognize that segregation or racism or the big issue in Madison was, and I know you're talking about the Western, but the big issue in Madison was, should these people become citizens, meaning African Americans? And then they begin to venture into looking at other ethnic groups and how poor they were. And much of that's in these diaries that shows records of discussions between the legislators on whether or not African Americans should have the right to vote. Should they be given real citizenship? And the answer was no. If you look at some of those writings, you could clearly see them being called the N-word and comparing them to other ethnic groups. I think it's the people who took the horn by the brace, and like the church. A church discommunicated people who were segregated in their activities. The church made a decision to shame slave owners who had slaves to make them free them. The church shamed many of them. So it's a feeling of they worked it out themselves. But I also think that when the soldiers came home from the Civil War, well, excuse me, before I say that, I wanted to say in the 1850s, there was marches and demonstrators and people coming from all over the country to demonstrate in the streets of Milwaukee saying that the right to vote is an essential part of being an American citizen and we should have that right to vote. And so that was there is feedback and fight back all the time on many fronts.
I guess what I don't understand, though, is how could it be that there was more representation of Black people throughout the state than it seems like there is now? Does that make sense? I'm trying to figure out how it was that it became so segregated to the southern part of Wisconsin, more Black people, whereas it sounds like it was actually, there were Black people all throughout the state.
I'm not sure I understand your question. So it is segregated, and African Americans had their roles, carrying backpacks and working in lead mines and doing domestic work. All of that occurred. I mean, for example, the law says there was to be no slavery in the state of Wisconsin. Clearly, 1789, we had as our the person in charge of administrating the law is Jefferson Davis. You know who Jefferson Davis is? He was a young second lieutenant in charge at Fort Crawford, and he was a person enforcing the law. He waived the rules. He made it possible for his soldiers to come home, come to the state of Wisconsin and bring their enslaved people. When the public saw that, they said, if he can do it, we can do it. So, and they did it.
So Claiborne.
So let me ask that. Let me ask it a different way, if I can, Claiborne. If since I lived in the northwestern part and I lived up in more of the western parts of the state, why wasn't there more black people even around me when growing up?
They,
because
I don't
know, very very white areas in these small towns.
I don't know the answer to that. But there was slavery in the north part. I mean, for example, the Bunga.
Right.
You've heard the Bunga, the word, the family Bunga. They usually relate to Minnesota more than they relate to Wisconsin. But they lived their life first as enslaved people, then business people, and they became close related to Governor Cass. They had enslaved people cutting down trees in the northern part of the state of Wisconsin.
So Tom, let me take a stab at it. Well, because back then, even as well as now, when in the state of Wisconsin, blacks make up 5 to 6% of the population. Can you imagine? Even back then, that number was even a lot smaller than it is today. And I think what people fail to understand in this country is the sheer numbers of black people in the nation, Claiborne, is 13% or somewhere.
Yeah.
So there weren't that many black people as there are now. There are just not that many black people in the country.
They were in La Crosse, Wisconsin.
That makes sense.
They were in La Crosse, that Wisconsin. Makes sense. The Moss family, I don't know if you ever heard of the Moss. They ran a barbershop in La Crosse, but there were many other African Americans in the La Crosse area. Now, I can't tell you about other parts other than far north of Superior where the Bungas were active.
So Claiborne, you mentioned before the conversation with Tom that military people, soldiers brought their slaves.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about the northern military?
Yeah, it was only one military at that time.
So and they could bring slaves.
The law said it was against the law, but Jefferson Davis, who is the post commander enforcing state law, said that you can only bring soldiers can bring their enslaved people. And other people then began to change the rules so that they can accommodate their own needs, like domestic workers. Right. Lead miners brought their enslaved people in. All of that began to happen. And the church fought back, primarily. The church shamefaced many of those slave owners to release their slaves.
You know, Claiborne, so help me understand, help us understand, there's a government. During all this time, congressmen, senators, and an organized government, while all this is going on in the legislature,
yes.
I mean, in the Congress and the Senate, the battle is going on before the Civil War and all of those things.
Yes.
And so this constant pushback from northern states against what was going on in the southern states. At the root of all of this, for the most part, you know, I've read and people say, well, it was the slaves were their property. And so this was what the battle was about. You know, some people own cows and sheep and other things, but we were the property of the people in the South. And that's what they were fighting for, was their financial resources, right?
That's right. That was their primary goal. But we're not talking about a lot of enslaved people in the state of Wisconsin. We're talking about few. But nonetheless, they wanted to change the rules to accommodate their own feelings. And just like we're talking about them respectfully now, they didn't talk about them respectfully then. They did not. They talked about them in a negative way and called them the N-word and on the floor of the legislature. And there's records of that kind of discussion, comparing them to other ethnic groups who are even poorer than the African Americans.
So what about the states around Wisconsin? What would made Wisconsin so different? There's Michigan, there's Minnesota, there's Iowa. What was there's different? The same things were going on.
There's slavery going on in those places as well. And there's slavery in all northern states. And I don't know the details of other states, but I do know they are.
No, I guess, Claiborne, I'm saying where where blacks were able to stop and create townships like they did in some of the parts of Wisconsin.
Right.
Did they do the same, and were they allowed to do the same in some of these other states?
They were.
Oh, they were.
They were able to create African-Americans, and some of them left cities like Milwaukee and went to white communities and settled in those particular areas. Yes, a lot of them did. Mostly after the Civil War, after the turn of the century, they thought that they would be received better in smaller cities when they weren't treated very well. Poor housing and poverty in cities like Milwaukee and others.
So Milwaukee and other places, German, Polish at that time, immigrants who had come over and basically made up what was Wisconsin, and yet throughout all of that, after slavery, we were able to then come up, blacks, and take many of the jobs and opportunities that were available many years down the road, decades down the road, after all the things you're talking about. Is that how we were able?
I don't know. What you mean, take their jobs? No.
No, I mean jobs that were offered.
They were fearful of us taking jobs.
Right.
In the 1862, there is legislation entered into the state legislature saying that African Americans could not be invited into the exclusion bill, it was called. And they tried three consecutive years to get that passed. It never passed. But poll taxes and punishment measures to prevent African Americans from coming to the state of Wisconsin. Yes, there are ways and things that they didn't want us to come to.
Listen, my guest is Claiborne Benson. He is the curator of Wisconsin's Black Historical Society. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. It's Black History Month, y'all. We'll be right back.
Then that time I went and said goodbye. Now I'm back and not ashamed to cry. Ooh, baby, here I am. Fine, sealed, delivered, I'm yours. Ah! Here I am, baby. Oh, you got the feeling in your hand. Ah, here I am, baby. Ah, you got the feeling in your hand. Hey, I've done a lot of foolish things that I really did.
At 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Claiborne Benson. He's the curator of Wisconsin's Black Historical Society. And Claiborne,
we had some pretty bold African Americans living in the state of Wisconsin. And I'm thinking in 1850s and 1860s. 1860, for example, we have Jonathan J. Myers, who is an abolitionist, he's a black man. He owns in downtown Milwaukee. He owns a business in downtown Milwaukee, and he lives in downtown Milwaukee. He and Ezekiel Gillespie lives in downtown, but there are others also living in that area. He gets the idea that he wants to go back to Africa, and he, without a passport, gets on a boat and goes back to Africa and goes to Nigeria. He is looking to create a settlement that would encourage and invite African Americans to leave Wisconsin and settle in Africa. He isn't the only one, of course. There are others that do that as well. They meet. There's a group that sends out a word to other African Americans and settle. They meet in Janesville, and from Janesville they embarked on going back to Africa. And those men actually do it. Jonathan J. Myers goes back, but he only stays a short period of time, say 2 or 3 months, and he takes his son with him. He stops in England on the way back. He meets with abolitionists in that area and African Americans who are in the idea of the Back to Africa movement, and they talk about it. And their goals and objective is to create farms or cotton plantations in West Africa, in Nigeria, and then ship that cotton to England. That's their goal, and probably no different than the Southerner that exists in the South. But that's their goals and objective. But it takes a great deal of guts to do that without passports, and he does do that. He returns to Milwaukee and he opens up a museum in downtown Milwaukee. He is the first to do so. Brings back all sorts of crates of African artifacts, and people begin to really begin to appreciate their African roots through his journey. Ezekiel Gillespie does the same thing. It's Ezekiel Gillespie's efforts to, and I've talked about him a little bit earlier, to get the state Supreme Court to bring attention to the issue of the right to vote. And he finds that indeed the state cheated on African Americans, and so they're bold, but there are many other people are bold like that in that period of time.
Hey, Claiborne, you talk about those gentlemen and fighting for the right to vote going back to the 1850s.
And 1850s.
I mean 1850s.
Yes, sir.
And yet, how does it make you feel today when you see people doing everything they can to even deny people access to vote, even today, after all of that history?
And it does occur. I mean, what did he have in 2019 or 2020,
right,
when COVID came into place and they only opened five polls? That's clearly a violation of preventing African Americans from the right to vote. Well, not just African Americans, white citizens too, who live in those neighborhoods. Yes, there are ways. There are current methods of preventing people from having the right. Even in a Democratic administration, is happening. So yes, it is happening.
So these men that you were talking about, a couple more.
A couple more would be William T. Green at the turn of the century, who boldly gets a civil rights bill passed, saying that African Americans have equal rights into public facilities and public buildings of sorts. And he takes this issue to court under a Republican administration and gets it passed. So in 1895, here in the state of Wisconsin, we get a civil rights bill passed. It's the first to do so.
And you're talking about men. Are there any black women that historically
contemporary, I mean, we have Miss Bernice Lindsay. We have Mrs. Audie Howell. You see their works. Lindsay Heights. Lindsay Heights. Miss Lindsay does so many miracle things. She's invited to Washington to testify and meet President Kennedy.
Hold that thought, Claiborne. Got to go to the break. 844-967-2789 is the number. My guest is Claiborne Benson. He is the curator of Wisconsin's Black Historical Society. 844-967-2789. We'll be back. 2789. It's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. My guest is Claiborne Benson, curator of Wisconsin's Black Historical Society. Go to the phone lines. And Jacob, hey Jacob, how you doing, man? Thank you very much for the call.
About his opinion on, you know, these politicians who are, like Earl said, still trying to stop civil rights, still trying to deny people their civil rights in this country in the 21st century. And I think, you know, of course, there's the number one prime example in the state of Wisconsin, of course, the racist Ron Johnson, who not only ran an extremely racist campaign against his opponent last year, Mandela Barnes, and Ron Johnson still barely won. And this guy is out there spreading every last crackpot conservative conspiracy theory you can think of, just basically to get people to not to notice what a corrupt buffoon Ron Johnson is, not to mention, you know, a big-time Trump supporter, after all, Ron Johnson, who was personally involved in trying to, you know, send those fake electors.
Let me say this. As we're talking about Black history, you know, be honest with you, both Democrats and Republicans both fall short historically with what happened historically in this country. And so, you know, one of the reasons why I had Claiborne come on is he doesn't spend a whole lot of time talking about politics. He spends the time talking about the history of what transpired and continues to transpire in this country. So, Claiborne, you can, if you want to answer that question about Ron Johnson, you can. But I you know, I don't know you to.
I totally agree with the gentleman, but it's nothing. I mean, we elected him for another 6 years, so there's nothing for me to say about him. I totally agree with him.
All right, Jacob, thank you very much for the call. So, Claiborne, you.
I want to finish talking about women.
Yeah,
we're talking about women that have made significant
historical strides.
Yeah, and so Audie Halliott, Columbia Savings and Loans, the oldest African-American institution or business in the state of Wisconsin, still does exist today. Very, very important. Mary Ellen Shad, who produces the Business Journal from 1948 through 1974, and her son is a communications tycoon publisher. Her son runs WNOV today. Very, very, very significant.
Oh, really? Gerald Jones's mom?
Gerald Jones's
mom.
What
did she do?
She was a publisher, newspaper publisher, radio owner. She did all of that.
Oh, okay.
She ran for office also. So she's very significant and important. Invisible woman would be Mrs. Cleopatra. Johnson, Cleopatra Johnson, who raised kids but supported her husband. Her husband was Clarence C.L. Johnson, who started the YMCA. We talk about how special the Walnut Street was and the community there, but it's really their works to make people feel comfortable and relaxed. People bring tears to their eyes when they think about Walnut Street, how special it was in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and even 60s, but it's because of their efforts, Ms. Bernice Lindsay and Cleopatra and Clarence Johnson, who ran the YWCA, creating recreation at recreational activities. Miss Bernice Lindsay, I started talking about her a minute ago. Her accolades go beyond my words. She is in charge of the YWCA on Walnut Street, but then she's invited to the White House to meet with President Kennedy to talk about issues related to black women nationally. She takes a delegation of people to the Congo to talk about Africa and how we can become African people involved in African issues. There's a housing project named in her honor. In 1937, she got a piece of land from the city of Milwaukee for no more than taxes and is able to create a subdivision there for returning home veterans who did not. In the 1940s and 50s, housing is a major problem, especially apartment buildings and such, and the city refused to build them. So she gets some investors together and build a housing project called a Carver Housing Project over on 4th Street, 4th and Reservoir. And those buildings still stand today. I mean, she really was a person of great distinction. There's a woman by the name of Lucy Parson. We were talking about the 40-hour work week early on and how significant, important, how Wisconsin took a leading role with the Chicago riot that took place, and many people were shot and killed down there. But so was six people shot and killed in Milwaukee and a big riot on the lakefront at the Illinois Steel Company. The companies wanted them to work indefinite hours, long hours, 40, 60, 70, 80, some cases 100 hours a week, and they had no personal time, and so they went on strike, and they hired African-Americans as scabs. It's Lucy Parson and her husband who created a wave of change, and today we enjoy the 40-hour work week.
Help me understand how it was possible these people who were able to build these businesses in the black community at a time when blacks couldn't get loans from banks and other places.
Well, they were
just to give a
they
for
were,
people who don't know who are listening, you know, it was a difficult undertaking for many blacks in Milwaukee and Wisconsin to get loans.
They knew the rules. The rules was that you don't mix black people and white people together. Say, for example, you were a beauty shop and a barber shop, and those were the common. My family were barbers. You had a white chair for white customers and white tools for white customers and black tools and black chair. And you didn't mix them together. In some cases, they had people who took showers in the barber shops. They had a tub for white people,
right,
and a tub for and they did business. They treated them with respect, and they made money. It's interesting you ask that question because at the turn of the century, there began a wave of creating businesses all throughout the Milwaukee area along that Walnut Street area. They are coming up with hotels and restaurants. They're coming with laundromats, and they're coming with beauty shops, and they shoeshine parlors. They work in the cigarette manufacturers and working in the tanneries. We are the largest tannery makers in the entire world. They take leather products here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, more than anywhere else, and make leather products out of it, purses and shoes and laundromat. I mean, and clothing.
Well, the tanneries were alive and well when I became a man.
Yes.
And down by the river and all of those things. So yes, I certainly recall the tanneries. But Claiborne, I will say to you, what happened in on Walnut Street was just a little bit before my time, and everything that I was able to read about that you just would man, wish it could happen today.
Yes.
Because it was, people were able to employ one another and do business, and money was able to change hands.
Yes.
And we were in a much better place because we did business with one another.
Yes.
And so that's kind of what's missing today.
Yes.
Is the dollar doesn't circulate in our community.
It does not. It goes to the white community. But I'd say that we're about...
Yeah, we're fine. Go ahead.
I would say that they work diligently to make business work in that Walnut Street area. But we didn't do it alone. There were the Jewish community in that area, and there were a few other ethnic groups also who shared that area with us. And the factories, the tanneries, were just down the street so that people would be able to go and get their jobs. And A.L. Smith hired a woman by the name of Nellie Wilson. And Nellie Wilson was an excellent welder and an excellent manufacturer. That's a woman. And Nellie taught African-American returning veterans in the 1950s how to manufacture clothing, how to be there on time, how to weld. Nellie did that.
Really? So she might have been one of the first black women to even be hired.
She's hired by the union to teach African-Americans.
Oh, how to weld.
By the union to teach African-Americans.
In
the 1950s. And she comes up here and she sets out to train people at these various places on how to weld, how to assembly manufactured items. This is a time which the population in Milwaukee began to grow. From 1949, after World War II is over, black people are coming from Louisiana, Arkansas, Tennessee, Missouri, and Arkansas. And they're settling in the Chicago and Racine, Kenosha, and more specifically
Milwaukee. Because of the manufacturing.
Because of the manufacturing, yeah. and the hope that the manufacturing. But you say because of the but that may be the surface reason for them wanting to come. But the real reason they wanted to come is to ensure that their kids get an education, because education was a priority here, and they wanted their kids to be able to read and write and to be able to have a choice on what kind of business.
So there was not public education in the South at that time as
racist,
free?
Racist.
Right, education.
Education in the South during that time, and segregation still exists. I mean, when Plessy versus Ferguson is passed at the turn of the century, they said segregation everywhere, on every subject, on everything, hotels, restaurants, everything, transportation, and even in schools. And so in 1954, that law has changed. And that law says the integration of school systems. And they found out that they were violating. Milwaukee and other major cities were violating on Brown versus the Board of Education. That still, even after the Supreme Court said it was okay, still black kids weren't getting that good education.
All right, hold that thought. 844-967-2789. My guest is Claiborne Benson. He's the curator of Wisconsin Black Historical Society. We'll be right back.
Now that's an important subject.
Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. My guest is Claiborne Benson. He's the curator of Wisconsin Black Historical Society. And Claiborne, you're talking about Brown versus the Board of Education.
Yeah, so once it's passed, African-Americans saw that.
So what is Brown versus the Board of Education, for those who don't know?
Well, let's take a look at Plessy versus Ferguson that legalized segregation throughout this entire nation. And saying that there should be a separation of races. You can't swim in the same swimming pool with white people. You can't go into the hotel with white people. You can't go into drink out of a separate water fountain, separate bathroom facilities. It goes on and on in terms of segregation. Truly, it needed to be changed. And in 1957, there are two important things that happened in this country. One happens with Martin Luther King, who's in Birmingham, and he is in Montgomery. He is fighting against the Montgomery bus boycott, and he is successful in the United States Supreme Court to say that segregation in the buses,
right,
in transportation was no longer legal. The Supreme Court ruled that it was no longer. So the combination of Brown versus the Board of Education and then Martin Luther King's efforts in Montgomery saying that the United States government is saying that segregation is no longer exists anywhere in this country, that we can now integrate on every level. But what they also find out in 1957 that in 1958 that they're still cheating on Brown, that black kids were being denied access to true integration in public school systems. White kids came in at 8 o'clock in the morning, went to their lockers and got their classwork and went to the classes of their choosing. Black kids came in at 9 o'clock, being bused from black neighborhoods, 9 o'clock, went to their locker rooms and went to trailers on the back end of the playground.
That happened to me.
That happened to you.
Yes.
And so that is what they were doing. And white and black parents were saying at home, my kids are going to a white school. They're getting good books, good teachers, and it's a white school. So I'm happy about that. They didn't understand that they were cheating on our black kids and not giving them a good education. So how did Wisconsin play a role in it? Thurgood Marshall meets with Lloyd Bobby here in Milwaukee and leads the charge in ending segregated school systems. He takes the issue back to court. Now, you can't just make appeal to the Supreme Court just because you say something's wrong.
Right.
You have to be given permission by the Supreme Court to examine this, and they do give him permission. Now, Milwaukee is not the number one violator of the Brown versus the Board of Ed. Cleveland, Ohio is number one. But Boston is doing it. New York's doing it. Chicago is doing it. Indianapolis is doing it. All of them are violating Brown versus the Board of Education. And then the key, and the Supreme Court does rule that they're wrong and they have to stop. But just take a look at this. What do black people want? Yeah, they want a good job. They want a car and they want a decent housing.
The same thing that everybody else wanted.
That's right. But more important than all these material things, they want their kids to get a decent education, and they was not getting it. And that is what happened in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and that is what and Lloyd Bobby brought about a major national change in.
So my generation, that's what happened with us.
Yes.
And I remember going to Garfield Avenue, an all-black school.
Yes.
And then being bused.
Yes.
To Peckham Junior High School in trailers.
Yes.
In back. Yes, didn't understand.
Yeah.
Until the conversation you just had with me now, that's what happened.
Keeping you segregated.
Yeah. Well, but my parents didn't know any better. No. My mother, they thought that if we were going to the white school, we were going to get a better quality education.
Yeah.
But that's, again, the history and why it's important that we need to know what that is.
Yeah.
You know, I experienced it and didn't know that.
Yeah. There you go. And it happened in Milwaukee.
And now it explains a lot of different things, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't understand why we were segregated inside of the school and forced to sit in separate tables in the corner.
In the cafeteria.
In the cafeteria.
The same thing happened to me too.
Yeah.
Separate tables in the cafeteria. White kids over this side and black kids on this side.
Yeah.
Now, every now and then one person might stray over to the other side. but not on a normal basis.
No, but see, but so when people don't know those things occurred.
Yeah.
We're doomed to repeat it. Yeah. And we're kind of almost in a cycle like that now.
Yeah.
Schools are segregated.
Yeah,
schools. Right?
They are.
After all of that time, we're still wrestling with segregated schools, trying to get the schools integrated again.
And we're still wrestling with too few kids are getting a decent education.
Right.
And the ultimate goal is to get an education so that you can provide for yourself and your family. And that's not happening.
You know, Claiborne, man, the time flies every time you're here. And I got to make an effort to get you in, not just during Black History Month, because, you know, everybody needs to know the history.
Yeah.
It's not just, like you said, it's not Black History Month, and that's all it is.
Yeah.
You know, and so quickly, why do you think out of all the other, you know, nationalities, you know, I mean, in groups, there's only Black History Month and no other?
I think that there's Irish history.
I know, but months.
They're celebration.
Where they've set aside a month.
Because we need it.
This is what we
need it desperately. At the turn of the century, Cottage E. Woodson came up with Black History Week and then expanded to Black History Month. We need it because we need to empower ourselves to be strong and to be equal citizens.
Because of what happened.
That's right. We need it. We need to know why it's important to read, and we need to know who our ancestors are. We need to know what things transpired so that it can strengthen us to be alive. That is why Black History Week is so important. Very much so.
All right, that's Claiborne Benson. Thank you very much, man. I really appreciate it. Look, we've got to go. Thank everybody who made the show go. Thank you, Connor. I'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later. I mean, that.